If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Final day of the 2026 NFL Draft. Six picks for the Packers, and of course, they had a bunch of undrafted free agents. You can follow all of this information, first things first, on Journal Sentinel and PackersNews.com. There's a lot of insights and information there, but we were able to put this draft in the books, and like, it was one of those things, not a big draft, but they filled some needs, and they have some interesting prospects, and even, you know, a lot of the news with the kicker and how they traded to get him. Just big picture, what kind of are your thoughts, Spoon, when you see the guys that were selected?
You know, nothing overwhelming. Yeah. I think they added some guys that I think they hope will create some competition, but there's nobody in there that I think you're going to say, okay, he's coming in and he's going to win a spot, a starting spot. I think, you know, I think this is very much a draft to protect themselves if they have injuries during the season, and also sort of a lead in, you know, probably to build on next year's draft, and that's going to be their future. You know, that's how these things go. But the one thing that could make this could be significant about this draft is only six guys, and you know, 4 years from now, what does that look like, that you only had six guys out of that particular class? You know, maybe you don't have very many guys pan out in the next few classes. That's the thing that will be interesting to watch over the years, is whether having just six guys is really affects them.
Yeah, I do want to jump into talking about the kicker, but before we do that, Ryan, I want to get your same just general impression, what kind of jumps out.
To what Spoon said, six guys ties a franchise record for the fewest in a draft class. Mm-hmm. I do think that it says a lot about the 2026 draft as a whole, and I think what helps is that they have a ton of picks in 2027, which is considered to be a much better draft class. By widespread, and I'm not a draft nick, but pretty much any draft nick was telling you going in, this was not a strong draft. Next year's much, much better. So if you're going to trade a first-round pick and you're only going to pick six players at any point, this might not be the worst year to do that. That'll be very interesting looking back historically if it pans out that way. But that's kind of the prevailing thought about this class as a whole. As far as what the Packers did, I think it was a continuation of what they were doing in free agency, which was a very selective roster building strategy that is very different than if you go back a few years ago to 2022, what they did then. You go back to 2022, in those 3 years, 22, 23, 24, knowing that the end of the Aaron Rodgers era was coming, a new quarterback was going to open a new era, Brian Gutekunst had a very heavy lift ahead of him. He drafted 35 players in those three drafts, which today represents 20 players on the roster. Much of that, those three draft classes are your core. And then you sprinkle in Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, and of course, Micah Parsons with Jordan Love. That's almost 25 guys. That's the core of your team. They needed to add depth. And if you look at what they did in free agency, they know Quay Walker's leaving, so they trade Colby Wooden to the Indianapolis Colts for Zaire Franklin. They just lost Colby Wooden. They bring in Javon Hargrave. You want to talk about a depth move? Lest anyone accuse Brian Gutekunst of not caring about special teams, he signed Sky Moore. They have a return specialist. You look at this draft. If you were to tell me going in, their four biggest needs in order were corner, nose tackle, edge rush, and offensive line depth, I would have believed you. And that's the first four picks. And then, oh, by the way, if there's a position where you might need to take two, it's corner. They have two corners. And then obviously the mic drop of the night, trading up to the back of the sixth round, Brian Gutekunst looking at the seventh round saying, there's nothing for me here. There's no value in these two picks. I'm going to create a kicking competition, because if you feel like you've created a championship roster, what's the one thing? If you follow the Packers, you know you better have secure. It's kicker. The last time these guys played, they lost a 4-point playoff game in Chicago and left 7 points on the board with 3 missed kicks. Now that's going to be one of the hottest position battles of camp between Smack and McManus. So it's very different than the volume shooting of 22 to 24, but it's a selective strategy where I think that they really pinpointed specific things that they felt like they needed. It doesn't seem like they reached in terms of value. It seems like they got decent value for their board. We'll see what kind of players they become.
Only time will tell. Yeah, only time will tell. But, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but we do live in a world where, you know, people like to complain about stuff. You know, I don't know.
Why are you talking about me like that?
You know, but, yeah, people complain.
Yeah, you're right? Looking really, really hard at me when you say that.
Right? So, I can't help but laugh. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times, even on this podcast, I said, we just moved into a new office. We're going to get the studio set up. We're going to have all of our microphones set. But you can still go to comments and people are going to be like, what's wrong? Why don't you have this and that? So, first off, everyone can just relax. But, you know, when we talk about the kicker situation with Trey Smack, people immediately said, oh, typical Brian Gutekunst. He's like, oh, you needed some viable players and then you go get a kicker. And when I looked at it, and you just kind of alluded to it, Ryan, like, there was really nothing else the rest of the way that he needed to, like, desperately get.
There's nothing in the seventh round either.
Exactly. You know, and so you have Brandon McManus, who's older, and who knows what Lucas Haversack could have been. And you have one of the best kickers in college football in Trey Smack that was available. So they don't know this. He might be the MVP of this draft class one day. No one knows that.
Are people upset by this pick?
Of course.
They are? Oh, yeah. I haven't seen the reaction yet. Yeah. So
do you get any of that on the blog?
Yeah, people really? Are wondering why they traded, you know, two picks for a kicker, you know, and their history of recent history of kickers has not been very good.
That's fair.
So, yeah. Now, this guy had a much better record than the last kid they took, you know, Carlson.
Yeah.
I mean, much better numbers in college. You know, the one thing I will say about the seventh round picks is what's changed in my mind is that the increase in the number of practice squad people you can keep means usually there's 16 guys you've been grooming who are farther along than seventh round picks. So they're the same as seventh round picks. Now you, instead of adding two or three seventh round picks, you have three or four additional practice squad guys. And those are guys that are about the same and maybe even better because they've had a year in your team. And so I think the seventh round probably isn't as important as it once was. And I can see them giving up those picks if you think there's a guy. Now, I don't know. They're picking a guy from Florida who's never kicked in the cold.
That does make
that's a big, yeah. big if. It wasn't great for Carlson, you know, and even McManus, who kicked in Denver, didn't do so well in the outside or outdoors in Philadelphia in the playoffs, in Chicago in the playoffs. So I don't know. I think it's worth bringing in another guy because you don't know what McManus, eventually he's going to fall off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you can do, probably, since rookie kickers usually aren't very good, it usually takes kickers a year or two to get through the league before they're any good. You could keep him on the practice squad. If he doesn't kick that well in training camp, nobody's going to sign him to be there on their 53. So you keep him on the practice squad, and if he just kicks the heck out of the ball in training camp, then you keep him in you know, you let McManus go, he'll be out on the street. So I guess that's what they're going to have, what their plan probably is with these guys.
I think that's a really good point, Spoon, about it, because I've been trying to wrap around my head what to expect from this position battle. Because on one hand, you have a veteran kicker who you just paid a $1 million roster bonus to. On the other hand, you have a rookie kicker that you didn't just draft. You took two draft picks to draft him. It's the pick that you moved up and took him with, and it's the additional seventh-round pick that you gave to the Seahawks. So at some point there, either way, something's got to give, right? I have a really hard time thinking Trace Mack doesn't win the job if he comes in, out gangbusters in camp and just looks really, really good. If he does, I think at that point you're going to see them go with the rookie. If he doesn't, you can release him. Nobody's going to sign him anyway because he didn't look good. He was missing kicks, and you can let him develop on your practice squad. That might be eventually where this is heading. As far as the Southeast kicker used to the warm weather, not used to kicking in the cold, Chris Jackie kicked at UTEP. Ryan Longwell kicked at California. It didn't affect them. Good kickers are good kickers, and they figure it out. And so we'll find out if Trace Mack is a good kicker or not. And if he is, like Mason Crosby, Ryan Longwell, Chris Jackie, he's going to figure out how to kick at Lambeau Field. If he's not, it's better that you know that early than later. So bottom line, you cannot have what happened in the playoffs last year, what happened in the playoffs in 2023, happen again. Yeah. I do think, and I'm fairly bullish on the roster building portion of this offseason, especially this draft, even with six picks, because I'd be a hypocrite to not be. They pretty much did, and this doesn't happen every year. It definitely does not happen every year. They pretty much did what I thought they should do. So I'd be a hypocrite to not be bullish. I think they have a very talented roster that can beat and go toe-to-toe with anyone in the league. I do not think that they figured out how to make all that talent into a Super Bowl caliber team. I don't know that they'll figure that out for 2026, but they have the talent to get there. You better have the kicking position secure.
There's not many questions I have about this. Obviously, who knows how it's going to all come together. But just like off the top of my head, I'm not like, there's not a lot that has come to my mind. I'm like, oh, is this going to work out? By that, I mean, you would imagine Jordan Love's going to be in a good spot. You think the offensive line will improve and things of that nature. The cornerback, that room is still the biggest room that I just don't know. Because I look at the draft picks. Like, these are guys that are only having, like a Damani Jackson. Like, he had two interceptions in 4 years in college football, was benched his final season for, he missed, what, 5 or 6 games, was benched. Came back for the SEC title game. So there's a lot of these.
Same with Cissé.
Yeah, Cissé, yeah, he had
2 interceptions as well.
Exactly.
Neither of those guys can catch. That's why they play corner.
So you see that, and who knows what Benjamin St. Juiced will be like. Who knows about Carrington Valentine. So there's still questions I have there. So I was fascinated in Brian Gutekunst's question that you asked him about veteran guys. Like, would they still explore that with corners? And before I get your thoughts on it, I do want to play a little bit of what Brian Gutekunst said about that.
Yeah, it's not something that I'm looking for, but certainly if the right guy's there, we would consider that for sure. But it's not something that we're actively seeking at the moment.
So, yeah, that really just caught my attention because I'm like, is a guy like Trayvon Diggs, is he still available out there? And so I'm wondering about that veteran route. So what were your thoughts on him saying he's not necessarily thinking or wondering about exploring that?
I sort of felt like when he took the second corner that was going to rule out signing a veteran because they're so conscious of giving young guys a chance to do something, show that they can play on special teams, to show that they're worthy of making the 53-man roster. And then, when they prove they can't, then they go and get somebody during the middle of the season or something like that. So I kind of wasn't surprised that that was his response. They had taken one corner, I think, instead of two. I think he might have been a little bit different. Maybe he would have been more open to that. Talking about this draft, I don't come away feeling the way I felt last year when they had Golden, and Golden was a really good player, and then Anthony Belton. Yeah. They pulled Belton out of their butt, and you knew that guy was just from massive size and ability, that those were two guys that were probably going to be able to help you right away. I don't come out of this with anybody who can help them as close to as much as those two guys.
So. I have a hard time Because I have no idea how these guys are going to be. Yeah. I just don't know. I wish I had that crystal ball right now, and I could say, okay, you know, Dennis Sutton's going to be a stud. That was a steal. I wish I could say, but I have no idea.
No clue.
What it looked like, and Brian Gutekunst mentioned this a little bit, the hairy point in this draft for him was late Friday night, and he was looking at 52, considering Chris McClellan, believing that it was thin, a thin class of big guys in the trenches defensively, but that the cornerback group was even thinner. So he wanted to get Brandon Cisse. But he was thinking about Chris McClellan at 52. And then he traded up seven spots in the third round, 77 overall, to take Chris McClellan. And then before the night ended, he wanted to trade up again to the third round for a third day two pick, specifically to deny Dennis Sutton. And instead, he didn't find a partner, and instead he was able to get denied Dennis Sutton in the fourth round, number 120 overall. That's a GM that feels like he got good value, but even he doesn't know what kind of players these are going to be. So I think the strength of this draft class from a draft management standpoint is that they were able to hit their biggest needs. And with very few picks, they were able to hit a lot of big needs, right? Yeah. Now, they still need a backup running back. I do think that there's other opportunities, whether that's bringing in a guy or however that may be. You can find a backup running back somewhere, somehow. It's not to say that they will, but you can do that. Third tight end. You know, this is a team. They brought in Josh Wiley as a third tight end last year. It's a blocking guy that needs to play a lot of special teams if you stay healthy. Like, that's what you're looking for a third tight end. They can bring someone off the street maybe to fill that kind of role. They can't bring someone off the street to compete for a starting corner job or to provide the edge rush depth in September when Micah Parsons is not going to be able to play because of the torn ACL. Like, those were things that they absolutely had to do in this draft, and they were able to get those things done.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing about – this really is the epitome of a draft class of, like, how did they do? Ask me in 3 years.
Yeah.
This is one of those groups because you can guess or assume. It's like, okay, Jagger Burton played a lot of football. He had some experience at center and guard, but, you know, who knows if that'll translate and he would still be, like, a quality – interior guy or a Dennis Sutton, or it's so much of a guessing game right now with this group. So yeah,
that's not a coincidence though that we're sitting there day three and Jagger Burton, who has played center, is the draft pick, considering they need specifically depth at center behind Sean Ryan, right? From a draft management standpoint, I think Brian Gutekunst handled this draft very well. What we have no idea is whether these guys can play. I have no idea if these guys can play, and that's ultimately what determines the draft.
Yeah, so it's going to be something big that we kind of watch and monitor, so we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. You just when you came, again, not to belabor the point, but, you know, you came out of last year, and you've got a guy in the Georgia defense, you know, in Warren Brinson, and you just know those Georgia guys are pretty good. They felt good about that. Then you get Sorrell, who's coming from Texas and had a whole bunch of sacks. It just was a different – maybe it was just a better draft last year. Maybe there was just better talent, or they maneuvered better, or I don't know what. But I'm not expecting a lot out of this group. I think they'll get what they can and hope Cisse. I think that's the big one. Hope they can get him to at least be a dime – corner, you know, maybe play some slot or whatever. And, you know, McClellan, if they have injuries, they don't absolutely need McClellan.
No.
I think they have enough big guys up front, but someone's going to get hurt, and at some point they're going to need him. So, you know, he doesn't have to start. He doesn't have to be even active in the early going, but eventually they'll need him. So those two guys are, you know, that's who you're going to be looking at.
The thing I would ask you, Spoon, I'm curious, when it comes to feeling underwhelmed, because where I'm impressed is specifically the management. They hit major needs with very few picks, right? They hit those spots that I thought they really needed to. It's not so much, these guys are going to come. They got real great talent here. But shouldn't that have been the expectation of a draft where you don't have a first-round pick, where you only have eight drafts come, draft picks coming in. Like, I don't know how there would have been more of an opportunity given their situation to feel much different than we feel right now. Do you think that's fair?
I think if they had pulled us a second rounder who wasn't as much of a developmental player as Cisse, I might have felt a little differently about the draft. But I think he's a guy, you know, that they're not saying he has to come in and start right away. Mm-hmm. So I, from that standpoint, you know, there might have been someone, you know, when they were getting to that point, nobody really excited me when they were getting to that point. So it's possible that they just took the best guy that was there. Maybe that's what they end up doing, and maybe it proves not to be that great of a draft. But I'll be interested to see around that pick who contributes this year. Like, yeah. Do mm-hmm. any of those guys, for are sure. they able to contribute right away?
Yeah.
So that's we won't true. Know that for several months.
I mean, that's true. He was gone before 52, I believe. But the big question is going to be D'Angelo Ponce. Is he overcome the height challenge, and is he the stud that he was at Indiana, and should you have gone up and traded up for him or not? Like, that'll be a fascinating
I'm strongly against 5'8 guys playing.
I hear you. I am too.
You know, unless you're Daryl Green, and you guys don't remember Daryl Green, you know, who was one of the best corners ever, I wouldn't take that chance.
Nah. I wouldn't have either. I said that I believe that Brian Gutekunst would draft D'Angelo Ponce when I see pigs fly. Like, that's just not what this team does, nor do I think it is what it should be. I would take a Cisse with the size that you need at that position to play the perimeter over a guy who is size deficient. But that's the whole – my point is at 52, when that's your first pick in the draft, it's going to be hard to be excited about anybody.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're behind the eight ball going into the thing. So to me, the best that you can kind of hope for is feel like you got value at key needs. And I do think they were able to do that. The other part of this, it's not a great draft. And historically, maybe it's wrong because we really don't know right now. But it's not expected to be a great draft. So when your first pick is 52 and what is not a great draft, good luck with that. Like, that's a tough way to go.
Yeah, that's even what stood out to me watching the first round. Because, I mean, we talked about it with just offensive linemen. There wasn't a lot of the crazy, you know what I mean? Some of those splash, like the Travis Hunt. Like, last year, it was nuts, right, with the Travis Hunt or, like, all these really just dynamic players. You just didn't see, like, and you kind of mentioned it last year, like, you just didn't see that this year. Like, yeah, maybe Fernando Mendoza will be good, who knows? But, yeah, I just didn't feel like it had as much star power in it this year. But, yeah, I'll be curious to see, like you mentioned, some of the guys around Cisse who might go. I went blank on the Tennessee corner who was dealing with injuries.
Jermaine McCoy.
Yeah, like, he was another guy. I would,
that'll,
like,
be interesting.
It'd be interesting to see if it works out, and we'll see.
I don't blame them for staying Cisse away from injury guys. Yeah. I mean, they've done that, and it's, you know, it's hurt them.
Yeah,
you
Colin
know,
Oliver.
Colin Oliver's going to be a decent player. I'm thinking back to guys like Kevin King, you know, who had some injuries and proved to be injury prone.
Yeah, he had the back entire career at Washington, right?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
the back.
And then just that was just, he just wasn't built, you know, and had injury history. There's some
could have had
guys.
TJ Watt.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Packers fans. But, I know it's still too soon.
You know, I think you have to learn your lessons from that kind of stuff. And Maybe McCoy then winds up becoming, you know, the second coming of Deion Sanders, but is it worth that risk?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You're right when it comes to Brandon Cisse being a developmental guy, but I think that Brian Gutekunst kind of expected that where he was in the draft, he wasn't going to get a day one immediate, like, right away starter, which is why he talked all offseason. Like, what he wanted to do there is add bodies to create competition. And then let the best guy win the competition, which is probably the best he could do there, which is why the Benjamin St. Juice signing was so important. That's a guy that's played in the league. He can come in and compete.
Yeah.
It's why the Cisse draft pick is still worth making, because he's a guy with the size, the athleticism, needs to develop, but he has a chance to come in and compete. Like, he's created the competition, Jackson in the fifth round. I'm not expecting him to be the starting corner, but he's going to come in and compete. Carrington Valentine is going to come and compete. There's enough guys now to actually have a competition. They've created that. And then we'll see who the best one is. He'll get the job. Is that good enough or not? I don't know. But I don't know what else they could have done there other than what they've done.
Yeah. What is it, almost like you can call them like six insurance policies?
Yeah.
Like, who knows what you'll get from them, but you have a backup, right? Like, maybe Jacob Monk just can't get it going, can't figure it out. It's like, okay, you have Burton, who might be your center, or maybe your guard for Banks or whoever. Like, you might have a guy that you can work with there. We talked about McManus there. You got Trace Mack, who could be a guy in the mix. And Damani Jackson, Cisse, McClellan, who could be another tackle. Obviously, they're good there with even the Jordan Rileys of the world. And, like, they got a lot of depth there. Stackhouse, Brinson, etc. But yeah, that's the biggest thing that comes to mind. It's like they just have a bunch of insurance policies, who maybe they'll work out and can be beneficial backups, or who knows.
You know, everything about this season, you know, you could throw this sheet of rookies you know, against the wall. What's going to determine whether they're a Super Bowl team is how much jump the guys from last year make, how much jump Edrin Cooper, Javon Bullard, all those guys who are now supposed to be hitting their peaks. And those are the guys that are going to determine how good the Packers are.
Yeah.
There's this isn't the group that's going to push them over to the top. It's going to be whether these other guys can really. Matthew Golden,
I mean,
has to have a huge year. So this is complimentary. It's those other guys that you're going to have to rely on.
It's the best thing Brian Gutekunst said today. He said, your next season is not really built on the incoming draft class. It's
not
determined
on building.
And that's not this team.
Yeah.
It's determined on the guys coming back. They determine what the season is, which, again, six-player draft class, only one spent on offense. I think that is especially true for the offense. I think this is a GM that very much believes, outside of adding some offensive line depth and now after the draft trying to find a second running back, a third tight end, he believes that the core of this offense is in place to be an elite offense. It's not whether or not they have the guys. Mm-hmm. It's whether or not they can be used the right way. And I thought what Matt LaFleur said today about that specifically was interesting, where, it's going to be easier to get those guys involved. Like, after years of hearing Matt LaFleur say, oh, it's a benefit to have so many guys. And we all, how many times did we look at him over the years and say, that's malarkey? Like, there's no way that's true. There's too many mouths to feed. Yeah. And so Matt LaFleur comes out today and it's like, yeah, it was tough. that was tough. You don't say giving it to nine different wide receivers in your offense with one football is a tough thing to do. It might be too many, which is what Brian Gutekunst needed to do in 22-23 when he drafted six receivers in those 2 years, and then 24. He needed to barricade his new quarterback with as much pass-catching talent as possible. But all those guys developed differently, and now it's very clear Christian Watson is the most explosive guy. Tucker Kraft is a potential all-pro caliber tight end. Jaden Reed is a damn good slot. Matthew Golden's a first-round pick. Ride those guys, and it seemed like Matt LaFleur at least understood that.
Yeah. I mean, but you kind of summed it up. When people's like, oh, what are your thoughts on next season, or who's going to need to step up and elevate their games? No one young. It's all guys that have been in the system that's coming back. And, yeah, the only new guys, if you will, that I'm curious about, like, how was Zaire Franklin workout, or Javon Hargrave, or Benjamin St. Juice, like, those newcomers, like, in the mix. But other than that, you mentioned, how does Xavier McKinney, like, if he's like a deep safety in this new defense, how will he thrive in that role? Well, they still have Evan Williams, though. I mean, I'm not going to keep rambling, but there's so many of these guys that have been in the mix, you could say, in this Packers organization for the past couple of years. Those are the guys that I have my eye on. So that really does stand out to me. So as we wrap this up, any final words and thoughts? Guys, anything that I didn't touch on or ask you now that we've wrapped up this draft?
I don't think so.
One last point on corner. If Micah Parsons comes back 100% Micah Parsons, like he was before the torn ACL, he devalues the significance of quarterback. I'm not saying it's unimportant, but it's much less important. We all saw how teams attack this defense with Micah Parsons harassing quarterbacks every single week. It's a lot of dink and dunk. They're not getting tested with near the frequency down the field, the perimeter. And ultimately, that's what the season's going to hinge on, right? How much better does Jordan Love get? Does Micah Parsons come back and be Micah Parsons? And if both of those things are true, if that both those things happen, this is a team that can beat anybody in the league. If they don't, watch out. That's bad. Like, there's no draft class that's going to make up for those two things. Like, that's what this hinges on. And if they do happen, you better have your kicker in place. You better make kicks in January. One, you mentioned the numbers with Anders Carlson and Trey Smack. I do think they're worth saying. Trey Smack was an 82.8% field goal kicker at Florida. He was 10 of 13, 50-plus. He only missed one extra point. I remember, Spoon, when we looked up Anders Carlson's numbers in 2023.
He was like 5 of 12 from
5 of 17 from 50-plus.
Like a 72%?
He was a 71% kicker.
Yeah.
He missed three extra points. When we looked up both sixth-round picks, when we looked up Anders Carlson's college stats, we all thought the same thing. Oh boy, that I don't know how this guy got drafted. That was what went through my mind when I saw those numbers. I see Trace Mack's numbers. I know how this guy got drafted. He was a much better college kicker than Anders Carlson. So I understand Packers fans the nausea of, oh God, another rookie kicker. You've seen this horror movie before. But it's not exactly the same when you look at the numbers.
Yeah, but my mindset too, and I think Gutekunst kind of made the point, does that just mean you stop trying?
Exactly.
Like, it didn't work out with Anders Carlson. It didn't work out with Braden Arvidsson. Does that mean, okay, I'm never going to try to draft the kicker again, just give up? Like, if Jordan Love didn't work out, is he all like, okay, can't draft a quarterback anymore, I'm only going to get vets and just pull him out of wherever and bring him to the roster? So that's the name of the game. Either you're right or you're wrong, and the key to being a good, successful GM is being more right than you are wrong. It's not rocket science.
The point I'll add to the Parsons thing is, you know, I agree, he does change the game, but they were significantly better when Wyatt and Parsons were there.
Yeah.
When Wyatt went out, then all of a sudden the run defense kind of sagged, and then they didn't have anybody to push the middle of the pocket. And so I kind of view that as a twofer. Mm-hmm. You know, Parsons will be great, but he is so much better when you have Wyatt mm-hmm. as well, when, you know, you can't afford to let a guy come straight up the middle and you have to figure out a way to block both of them. And Wyatt played so much better against the run last year. He's a dual-dimension guy. And so I think that's going to be enormous to have both of them on the field.
We said this as soon as he went down to Detroit on Thanksgiving. Devontae Wyatt's the player that makes Micah Parsons better. Micah Parsons is the force multiplier, makes everyone else better, including Devontae Wyatt. Makes everyone better. Devontae Wyatt's the player that makes Micah Parsons better. But, and we'll see age 33 season, but I think where they might even be better, Javon Hargrave very well might be better than anyone Devontae Wyatt had around him last year. Kobe Wooden was fine against the run. He didn't rush the passer. Carl Brooks didn't rush the passer. Javon Hargrave, we'll see how much he has left in the tank, but there's still something there. He rushes the passer. You have two of those guys now. That is a significant improvement than what they had last year, having that second guy. And all of that goes, you look at the teams that win in this league, Seattle Seahawks, Philadelphia Eagles, you look at the teams that win in this league, they're great in the defensive trenches. When you're great in the defensive trenches, it sure helps your back end. And that's the thought. That's the plan here. You just see if the plan goes according to plan.
Yeah. I mean, last year, you can say it was a small sample size because of the injuries, but the game I think about where that Wyatt-Parsons combo was that first Minnesota game.
Yeah.
That game with that front at Lambeau, I was like, okay. Like, when those two guys are locked in like that, McCarthy, he had no idea what to do with
that. They took over that third quarter.
Yeah, so that's like when it comes together like that, yeah.
And now you're adding a Hargrave there. So I just – I'm bullish on the roster talent. I have no idea if they can translate that. I'm not making any bold predictions there, but I'm very bullish on the roster talent.
Absolutely. So, but hey, that puts a ribbon on the 2026 NFL draft. We survived. We advanced, but we did not have to deal with 600,000 fans in this parking lot. And apparently, there were 800,000 in Pittsburgh. Not buying it.
No, I'm not buying $600,000 last year at Green Bay. I think the NFL inflates these numbers. Do you guys
think?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm going way out on a limb.
Yeah. Now. Well, hilarious to see $600,805. I'm like, there's no way. Because I'm like,
it's going to be a million soon. They're going to say a million soon.
Oh, I know.
Within 3 years, it'll be a million.
And who just eats that stuff up? ESPN. Yep. Just, you know, record number. And they do that with the viewership and all that crap. I don't believe them.
Not at all. I mean, Goodell was begging. Like, tell people you can still come out here before he was telling you. I'm like, yeah, they ain't breaking up.
When they put a giant semi full of beer, free beer.
They did that?
$800,000. No, I said, they'll get $800,000 to come out.
That and a burger from Primanti Brothers. If they had that at Pittsburgh waiting for me, I'd be there.
You've covered a lot of drafts, Boone, and you haven't covered a lot of drafts, Dominique, but you've covered very different drafts.
Yeah.
Do you prefer these type of drafts where it's very let's be honest, there's a lot of sitting, waiting, doing nothing. Last 3 days. We're still tired because there's some late nights, but a lot of sitting, waiting, doing nothing. Six picks. And there's been, you know, what was it, 2023, 13 picks, more than double. What kind of draft do you prefer to cover?
Well, I think it's more interesting with a first round pick. There's much more drama and guessing. Mm-hmm. This weekend was kind of boring. It was boring. I'm probably jaded a little bit because the whole blog thing that we have is just a mess, I'm really eager for that to change, and it would have made my life easier. But I don't want 13 picks. I absolutely do not want 13 picks.
That was awful.
That's the worst. But a good 8 picks, that's not bad.
8 to 10.
And one in each round and maybe an extra or two extras, or maybe you start with 10 and you wind up with 8, mm-hmm. Something like that. That's cool to me. A good trade is always something worth writing about. I'll take this, I guess. The first round would have made it more interesting, but just don't give me those 12, man.
Hey, the clutch move of the week, it was trading out that 7th round pick for us. We're not talking about the Packers' impact. We're talking about us here.
That was nice.
There was a collective rejoicing when, they're done. And then it's interesting, too, which is nice. Like, there's a kicking battle that we didn't know about. Like that. But trading out that 7th round.
We should have been here when there were 14 rounds. It was just absolutely insane. But then they didn't bring each guy out to talk to you. You didn't get to talk to them until they actually made it into the facility, I think. They always had the first rounder come in, or maybe the second round. I can't remember, but 14 rounds was absurd.
You know what I never covered was the 2 day where it was 3 in the first day, and then the I never covered that, and I'm glad I never covered that. I would not enjoy that. I liked the format of the 3 day. I like that. The first round's always going to be, for all of us, exciting. It's always going to be interesting going into the first round. And it's so much more interesting now in the second round, which really, from an interest standpoint, as sleepy as it was for the Packers in the first round, the fact that you have Friday night in the second round is almost kind of an extension now of that first round. Like, that helps the interest barometer the way it is. And then Saturday is just a really long day, but there's no way around that. I do like the format of what it is now, but yeah, it was very, very different. We've been through these 13 player drafts in 23, and having 6 was it was very different.
Yeah, very nice. I didn't have anything to kind of gauge drafts on. Last year was my first, and that's not normal. so
you've covered a draft in Green Bay and a draft in not Green Bay, and those are two very different spectrums.
It was funny pulling up to in the parking lot Friday, and I just kind of turned around, looked at the rush, and we both pulled in. I'm like, oh yeah, a year ago I was standing in this spot, there were a couple thousand fans screaming when Matthew Golden was announced.
Well, the highlight of the 3 days was Thursday night when you and I were sitting alone in the media auditorium, and it's a new setup here, the media area at Lambeau Field, brand spanking new, just open for the draft, and we hear a voice, trade it up,
And I look up, it's Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur, there's so little going on Thursday night, because they knew they weren't getting into the first round, that Matt LaFleur is checking out the new media area. And, like, that just kind of hammered home just what this Thursday night, they all knew going in that their draft starts Friday night. Like, yeah. He was here to check out the media area. He looks at me, he goes, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, mm-hmm. "Yeah, they had free food. What can I say?" Like, Thursday night was kind of a wash.
That's it. So, hey, we made it. So it was good to put this in the books, and appreciate all that you do. And Spoon, God bless you for dealing with that blog. You're a good man.
I hope y'all understand. This man gives so much to this blog. It is. We talk about, like, I can't do that. Like, no. I don't know how you do that. No. I can't do what you do there. It's really, it's the eighth wonder of the world, what you do with that blog.
I don't know. It's my baby, so
it is.
You know
how
it is. Well, it's an excellent.
No, it's incredible. Yeah. I love looking at it, but I will let you know that it will retire with you. We can't keep it going.
I can't do it.
I promised the readers that if they don't have a new format for it, I'm retiring.
Easy.
You know, that's it.
We're getting it fixed.
Yeah. That, you know.
Dan better get it fixed.
They're like, fixed. Okay, you can leave.
That's like, a mandate. That's a mandate is what we just heard.
We're getting it fixed. Yeah, we need this guy, so that's great. But no, we do appreciate it, though. And thank you all, though, for checking out the Green 19 podcast and following along with all the coverage over the weekend. And we'll still have some more stories and insights coming in the coming days, and get ready for rookie mini camp and training camp, OTAs, and so
all
much
right,
more.
Stop. I don't want to think about that.
Spoon's going on vacation, yeah. Where I fully expect him to be on a beach somewhere, sipping umbrella drinks.
Oh, yeah.
Not thinking at all about the Packers.
In a month.
You got a month. You got a month. So, all right, I'm not going to keep listing the things right, that are on the plate. Thank you all so much, and enjoy your week. And thank you for checking things out. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.